Chapter 17. Blood for the Blood God. Kaladin had begun to realise that he, like Ruggalo, was no longer quite sane. They both were in a dreamlike fug, attempting to screen off reality. Yet the world they faced was not reality at all. It was a warped perversion of everything they had ever known. Here, they were in the lounge of a chaos-transformed starship, piloted by a demon-possessed woman who already had tried to disembowel one of them, yet they behaved as though they were in no danger. His head in his hands, Kaladin agonized over his mother. Ruggalo had dismissed his claim that she had helped him struggle free of his bonds in the distillery. His vision was that the ropes must have been loosened by the fluid in the vat, perhaps had not been tied properly. Kaladin knew differently. His mother's soul was in the warp after all. Of that, there was no doubt. He went through the possibilities. Perhaps it had been his mother at first, and then a demon had impersonated her. But at the end, Angelica pushed herself back from the control board.
"A greater demon is behind us," she said. "There's nothing I can do. We are being pulled into the cluster by an irresistible force."
"It's all dark, my dearest sister," Gundrum gurgled, his eyebrows jerking up and down. "Dark stars that were ablaze with light."
"They emit dark light, brother. It is a form of chaos radiance."
She joined them at the elegant table in the middle of the lounge. On it stood the liqueur bottle, containing its lustrous yellow essence. Gundrum picked up the bottle and gazed at it with an appreciative expression. Only a small amount of the liquid remained.
"Oh, Coiler. Our good friend, Coiler. I was fond of him. And what better way to remember him than..."
Kaladin took his head from his hands. He stared, appalled, as Gundrum unstoppered the bottle and poured the last of the liqueur into four tiny glasses. It emerged slowly and thickly, glistening in the light. Pursing his lips, his eyes bulging, Gundrum swallowed.
"Ah, dear friend! So pleasant to know you again."
He shivered and glanced with lugubrious surprise at the shocked looks of Ruggalo and Kaladin. Angelica, meanwhile, sipped casually from her own glass.
"Drink! Drink! Have you not drunk of our friend Coiler before? Do not insult him now."
They lowered their gaze to the drops of life essence Gundrum had poured out for them, anticipating the pleasure the unnatural indulgence would bring. Gundrum was right. Resignedly, in an ironic valediction, they raised their glasses in a salute, then put the last of Coiler to their lips. The painted spaceship curved into the rose cluster as if in a power dive. Eventually, it slowed and drifted. All the stars looked alike. Ruggalo and Kaladin gaped in fascination, unable to understand why those stars seemed so luminous when they put out no light. Gundrum's and Angelica's explanations made no sense. Angelica took the controls again. She studied the tabulator briefly. They were in a planetary system, the local sun showing as a brilliant obsidian ball. Kaladin expected her to attempt to fly out of the cluster again, to find a route out of the eye. He had forgotten that such directness went against her method of navigation. She steered by faith, and by feeling, by obedience to the strange ways of chaos. And chaos had directed her into the cluster. Her emerald green eyes became misty. She made for the nearest planet. It loomed up, seemingly composed of jet or ebony, washed in the black light of the obsidian sun. As the painted spaceship whispered down through its atmosphere, glimmering red splotches came into view. The craft flew over a midnight landscape where volcanoes erupted like blowtorches. Angelica set the ship down gently. Kaladin gave a cry of alarm when she pulled the lever to let down the ramp and open the port without checking the quality of the outside air. But no poisonous vapours or deadly spores drifted up the elevator shaft to invade the ship. Only a sulphurous smell. Curiously, they all followed her. She stood at the top of the ramp, looking over the desolate landscape.
"Bracing," she breathed.
She passed down the ramp with a curious high-stepping tread and rubbed her bare feet in the strange cinder-like soil, from which wriggling worm-like tendrils were constantly poking and withdrawing.
"This is the place. Oh, my brother, we enter the dark night of the soul. Pleasure beyond compare."
She began to dance, waving her arms in the air, lurid flashes from the distant volcanoes giving her flesh a rosy glow amid the jet black of the sun's illumination. Her face had come even more alive, her emerald eyes glittering. Ruglow shook off Kaladin's restraining tug and followed her down the ramp. He was in a trance. Never had she looked more exotic, more magnetic, with her heaving bosom and full rump straining to burst out of her basque. He held out his arms and walked towards her.
"No, Maynard, no!"
Kaladin ran down the ramp, seized Ruglow and pulled him away, but Angelica was not even looking at either of them.
"It is the Black Sun, brother," she trilled.
"By the roots of my desire," Gundrum boomed.
Now she uttered a delighted shriek and seemed to explode out of the bounds of nature. She became the demonette again, the daughter of Slaanesh. Her green eyes grew slanted, more large and more saucer-shaped. Masses of green hair surrounded her head and shoulders. Her hands became long, razor-toothed pincers. A long, thick barbed tail sprang from the base of her spine. Her feet became two-toed eagle's talons. But it was in her beauty that the transformation was most startling. It was a beauty to induce ecstasy in the beholder, a beauty that was utterly irresistible and at the same time utterly loathsome. Now Gundrum was standing on the cinders, staring at his sister, entranced. The look on his face was extraordinary, even for him, as though he had ceased to be human altogether and had been converted into some alien creature with a different set of emotions. Then Angelica struck him. With one pincer-like claw, she seized her brother by the neck. The other delicately tore away his dark-coloured clothing and then began playing with his exposed skin, stroking, teasing, cutting, ripping. Blood flowed. With a crunch, she snipped through ribs and removed them, exposing lungs and heart into which her pincers playfully delved. Gundrum put up no resistance, apart from flapping one arm about ecstatically. He gave voice to a continuous, ululating, hooting screech of agony, enjoyment, and encouragement.
"Truly, sister, truly! This is what it had to come to! By my roots, sister! By my roots!"
Kaladin still held the melter gun. He whipped it out, despite remembering what little effect it had had before on the demon, intending at least to put Gundrum out of his torment. Ruglow grasped the weapon, forcing the muzzle up. His face was wild with passion.
"Leave her alone! It's my turn next!"
The burst of energy gouted into the air, momentarily outlining the scene in a white glare. In the same moment, the demonic Angelica raised a talon and elegantly tore open her brother's skinny abdomen, then dipped inside and tickled his intestines, as though splashing her toes in water. With each new sensation of pain, Gundrum's shrieks became even more joyous. Surely, pain alone could not do that. What incredible delights were being added by Angelica to the unbearable sensations. With one jerk, she pulled out Gundrum's intestines in a bloody tangle, wrenched out his still pumping heart, and flung aside his twitching, mutilated body. She looked pleased with herself.
"He goes to Slaanesh. What better gift could a sister give her brother?"
In her nearly normal tone, she added,
"It's Gundrum's birthday."
She came forward, reaching out with her still bloody claw.
"Now, I like you too, Maynard."
Ruglow took a step back, then, with a shuddering sigh, stumbled to meet her. When Kaladin tried to stop him, he threw the navigator to the ground with a shrug of his shoulders, using sudden, surprising strength.
"Angelica!" he groaned.
Kaladin couldn't use the melter gun on Angelica without burning Ruglow. He fired it in the air again. The resultant glare revealed two figures standing a short distance away, previously unnoticed in the negative light. Whatever was about to happen between Ruggalo and Angelica stopped. Something in the manner of the demonic Angelica seemed to change. The two figures were huge and hulking and wearing shining armour. Shining even in the black light, which totally enclosed them, like spacesuits but much bigger. Kaladin climbed to his feet. It took him some moments to realise who the newcomers must be. He had never expected actually to see such heroes of the Imperium, but he had watched administratum propaganda dramas depicting their exploits. Space Marines. At least, the one on the left looked like a Space Marine. Of the other, he wasn't sure. It was as though a Space Marine's armour had contracted a cancer and put out uncontrolled growths. Two great horns projected over the helmet. Walls and strange devices covered the rest of the plating. Kaladin turned to the Marine he felt sure must be a warrior of the Imperium. Indeed, he could just make out the Imperial Eagle. He whipped off his bandana to show that he was a navigator. "Help us, sir! We are lost and in danger!" Neither took any notice. They moved apart from one another, all their attention on Angelica. From the helm of the cancerous quasi-marine, a strong, grim baritone voice issued.
"Beware! She is your enemy, a child of Slaanesh, a giver of indescribable delight, a bringer of joyous degradation. She will debauch you if she can, and do not be deceived by her lack of weapons. She has powers. We do not."
Angelica walked past Ruggalo. She jabbed a pincer towards Magron. Her voice was now spiteful as she spoke.
"Though he wears the sigil of Zench, he is bound for Khorne. We do not like Khorne."
Captain Abadas raised his bolter.
"Do not waylay us, debauched one. I am sworn to help my brother comrade find his destiny. And though I remain human, I have some manner of gifts from more masters than one, and will not yield easily. So do not anger the Blood God by denying him a future prince."
Angelica's face contorted with fury.
"I do not want his caress any more," she spat.
She writhed and suddenly was her human form again, but only for a moment. The demon reappeared, but seemed to erupt out of the human woman like a snake sloughing off its skin. Suddenly there were two creatures, a naked human female who slumped senselessly to the ground, and the basque-clad demonette standing beside her, glittering, full of fatal loveliness and beautiful malevolence. At Abadas's signal, Magron also pulled his bolter from its bracket. But the demonette, she could not be called Angelica now, did not attack. She raised both pincers in the air.
"I know who has brought me here. I have somewhere to go."
There was another convulsion, a flash in the blackness. Suddenly, to the further astonishment of all but Abadas, the female demon was astride a mount. It was bipedal, with ostrich legs and a long reptilian-looking body covered in green and lavender fur. The steed's snout was long and tubular. From it a long tongue shot constantly in and out, like the demonette's own tongue, but larger.
"Away!"
At her urging, the mount strode towards the distance at immense speed. Then it appeared to be climbing an invisible mountain, running skyward. It was impossible to tell what happened next, whether rider and mount merged into the black sky, or merely vanished.
"It is a mount of Slaanesh," Abadas explained to Magron. "A demon of low rank, often ridden by debauched ones. Come, brother, we are close to the place. Should we not succour these unfortunates who have called on us for help?"
Abadas looked at the surviving pair. It was obvious to him that they were from outside the eye. Sometimes traders found their way in, looking for easy riches. Usually, they got themselves into trouble, as these had. Plainly, the woman had given herself up to possession by the demonette, allowing it to venture into the galaxy at large. It did not need a physical host in the Eye of Terror. It could manifest itself directly. But he could not explain this to Magron. He had given him a different account of things.
"Let others assist them. We are on a path of destiny. Come."
He strode off, Magron lumbering after him. When they had gone, Ruggalo and Kaladin crept to where Angelica lay on the cinders. She was limp and quite dead. Ruggalo was bewildered. He remembered the uncontrollable, erotic mania she had evoked in him. Yet the woman he saw now could never have done that. She was not even young. She was probably older than Gundrum, with sagging flesh in place of the former plump firmness. Her face was simply not the same face at all. The features were quite different, with none of the vampiric magnetism which the other Angelica would have possessed, even in death. Ruggalo was reminded more than anything of a disappointed, ageing spinster. No wonder she had been willing to give herself up to possession by a demon of pleasure. They stepped back, averting their gaze from the remains of Gundrum. Mortified and ashamed, Ruggalo looked up at the spaceship. Its rainbow hues had turned to striations in various shades of black, obsidian, charcoal, ebony, sable, in which murmurings of subdued colour could be discerned.
"We've got the ship," he said, "and Gundrum's trade goods. The liqueurs alone are worth a fortune. No one else will ever obtain any."
Kaladin stared at him. "You can't sell those. They are made from murdered human beings." Ruggalo raised his palms up and shrugged.
"Look around you. It's a tough universe, Pelor. Some good ought to come out of their sacrifice. You've got to pilot us back to the Imperium."
"The Astronomicon is not visible from here. I can't get us back. That's why we were following Angelica."
"Of course you can," Ruggalo urged. "Remember what Coilus said? Have faith. There's no one to help us now."
"We ought to bury these two," Kaladin mumbled. He stepped back further from the corpses. Gundrum and his sister Angelica had both paid the price for their involvement with the Eye of Terror. What foolishness. Why was he here, he wondered. What affliction had led him here? Perhaps it had something to do with his mother. She had begun by pleading for his help, which he had been unable to give, but she had ended up helping him. It seemed as though a circle had closed. The thought made him calmer. He cast his eye in the direction in which the two armoured warriors had disappeared. "There might be someone who can help us," he said. "Those two are space marines, or at least one of them is. He wears the Imperial Eagle. He must be here for some reason. Perhaps he has a ship with a navigator who knows a route out."
"What about our goods?"
But Kaladin was already stepping out over the cinders. Reluctantly, Ruggalo followed. A newly formed lava flow made a sludgy red river in the middle distance, pouring from the rough cone of a young volcano. Paradoxically, its glow only served to obscure the structure ahead of the two space marines, which otherwise stood out stark and clear in the negative light. It was a semicircular colonnade. Arranged within it were four broad altars, each surmounted by a different grotesque idol, symbols of various kinds forming a backdrop. To one side of the colonnade stood a small stone building. A hulking human figure with a stern face sat on a stone bench before it. He wore a simple surplice of four colours, red, blue, yellow, and purple. As Abadas approached in his humming power armour, he rose and made a sign of blessing, recognising the ex-Dark Angel.
"I bring you a supplicant, chaplain. Dedicate him. He is destined for the Blood God."
Magron scarcely noticed his words. He stood transfixed, staring at the altars, fascinated by the aura of majesty and power the entire colonnade emanated. The figure on the left shone with an unnatural beauty which reminded him of the captivating demon they had just encountered. It was bisexual, male on one side and female on the other. Two pairs of horns rose from the flowing golden hair. The idol was clad in a fringed male shirt and held a jade scepter in one hand. On the far right of the colonnade was displayed an idol of absolutely opposite nature. A grossly bloated and decayed figure squatted on the altar, a pile of billowing flesh, narrow-eyed, huge-mouthed, unspeakably repulsive in expression and appearance, seeping green and yellow pus from ulcers, pustules, and gangrenous lacerations, through which Necros' internal organs spilled. The constant seepage made Magron think the statue was alive at first, before he realized it was truly motionless. He turned his attention to the inner pair of altars, next to the disease-ridden idol, which he assumed to be of Nurgle, Lord of Pestilence, was a figure which, in its own way, struck him as almost equally ugly. A puckered face, lacking any neck, was jammed straight down on a pair of thick-set shoulders, from which sprang curved horns. Some magic was at work. Constantly changing faces crawled over the naked skin of the figure, leering and mocking. A vague phantasmagoria hovered around the idol's head, a confusion of momentary images. But it was the fourth idol which riveted Magron's attention most. It stood out from the others, for it was taller, seated on a weirdly fashioned brass throne, which in turn rested on a mound of skulls. A muscular humanoid figure in elaborately worked plate armour, face half hidden by a winged helmet. But what a face! Magron could see it well enough from where he stood looking up at it. A face of utter bestial ferocity. The red eyes glared straight at him, demanding and expecting all his courage, all his martial ardour, and his unquestioned obedience. Here was a face to lead one to war. He suddenly felt as if everything in his life had been leading him to this moment. The word-bearer chaplain was speaking to Captain Abadas.
"You bring a brother marine, I see. But..."
"He is newly arrived," Abadas said, knowing that the chaplain recognized the almost unchanged antiquity of Magron's armor. He raised a gauntlet in warning. "But speak no more of that, or he will turn aside from the ordained path. Prepare him for the dedication."
Magron regarded the chaplain. He saw that he bore all the marks of a space marine, the hefting increase in weight and stature, the martial countenance, the campaign studs on the brow. He saw a darkening beneath the silky surplice, betraying the black carapace and welded ribcage. Abadas hoped he did not notice the chaplain's chaos favours hidden below his surplice, in the form of tentacles tipped with articles of worship. The chaplain stood up.
"Remove your helmet. The blood god will want to see your face."
Magron held back.
"I still feel some loyalty to the Emperor," he admitted. "And the new state of affairs seems to me disordered and without reason."
The word-bearer chaplain nodded, unperturbed by Magron's misgivings.
"It is customary at this point to say a few words about the steps you are about to take."
He pointed a finger to the colonnade.
"Yonder are the shrines to the four great chaos powers. The word-bearers worship chaos in its undivided entirety. So does your Captain Abadas. But most men must serve one lord, as you must. You speak of disorder and needless bloodshed. It is true that the followers of chaos commit gross excesses, but these only reflect the crudity and violence in the human psyche. Do you not see that the chaos gods are creations of human consciousness? It is all part of the evolution of the galaxy. It is a stage humanity has to go through to attain spiritual maturity. Any who hold back will fail."
The word-bearer's homily took away Magron's last doubts. He removed his helmet. The red eyes of Khorne bored into him as the chaplain ushered him towards the altar. Although this was only an idol, it was an idol in a world blessed with the energies of chaos. The presence of the deity himself was in it, and Abdazol Magron was face to face with the blood god. The chaplain began to recite a litany in a language unknown to Magron, a language with long, liquid vowels. With each refrain, a blood-curdling growl came from the blood god idol. Magron's brain blazed with a red mist. the promise of glory. The chaplain broke off and spoke softly to him.
For now you will remain unchanged physically, but your lord will signal his willingness to accept you by means of marks on your armour.
Instantly, Magron felt as though he had been struck a ringing blow. A feeling of rage coursed through him. Thunder rumbled from the idol. He looked down at his armour plating. The imperial emblem was gone. In its place was the blood-red emblem of Khorne, three bars linked by a cross. And from each vambrace there had sprouted what at first looked like gouts of gore, but were in fact hook-like claws, clenching and unclenching, as if hungry to rip flesh. Leading him away from the altar, the chaplain spoke in a stentorious voice, using Imperial Gothic.
Do you renounce and revile the Emperor of Mankind? Do you pledge yourself to Khorne and embrace his favour and punishment?
A tumult arose in Sergeant Magron's heart. Once he took this vow, he knew he would have finally turned his back on his old life and be forever Khorne's. Something in him still resisted. There was an obdurate core which wished to die rather than change. He pushed his stubborn core away from him and opened his mouth to deliver the required response. At that very moment, he was distracted by a shout. A slim, black-clad figure was emerging from the blackness. It was the navigator he had seen earlier. A Meltagun dangled from one hand. Stumbling along behind him came his goatee-bearded companion, pleading with him to turn back. Mentally unhinged as he was, Pelor Kaladin had lost all caution and fear of death in his outrage at what he had heard. He yelled at Magron at the top of his voice. How can you take part in this blasphemy? You are a space marine. You are sworn to the Emperor. Where is your loyalty? Where is your honour?
It is Khorne who offers honour, Magron roared in retort, pleased at how offended he felt. You fool! Your Emperor is dead these 2 centuries, killed by Horus the Warmaster.
Captain Abadas drew his short sword and strode forward, intending to dispatch the intruders forthwith, but Magron stayed him with an uplifted arm.
Is that not so, Captain?
It is indeed, Abadas rumbled, and these 2 have defiled a holy ceremony. Kill them for their presumption, Sergeant. That is an order.
In his panic at these words, Maynard Ruggelow found his brain racing. He knew little of Imperial history, but everyone with any schooling had been told of the Great Civil War, when traitors, led by the vile Horus, had attempted to usurp the Emperor. He looked hastily from one marine to the other, and sensed from whence came the deception. He pointed to the warrior in weirdly misshapen armour.
He is lying to you. Horus was defeated and the Emperor still lives. We are in the 41st millennium. Kill the liar!
Abadas boomed, but he made no move himself. Magron turned to him. He looked as if a veil had been lifted from his eyes. Seeing that expression, Abadas knew that the illusion he had lovingly wrought for Sergeant Magron had been dispelled, and that there was no longer any help for the Dark Angel. He put up his short sword and drew his bolter. Magron was remembering the sanctity of his years as a Dark Angel. His unshakable faith in the Emperor flooded back to him. The scene around him, with its 4 chaos idols, seemed suddenly evil and corrupt.
What is the truth? He demanded of Abadas.
The truth, Abadas said harshly, is that Khorne has drawn you to him, and you have robbed yourself of eternal life.
In that instant, while Captain Abadas aimed the muzzle of the bolter at him, the struggle for the soul of Sergeant Magron was over.
I will not forsake the Emperor, living or dead, he cried. But I will know the truth.
He ran at his captain, deflecting the muzzle of the bolter as it barked its death song. His rush was unexpected and pushed Abadas off balance. Both marines crashed to the ground, crunching the cinders beneath them, and rolled so that they were face down, Magron on top. Power cables hummed, ceramite plates creaked. Abadas's armorum ferrum, as the Mark III armor was sometimes called, had great strength, greater than Magron's Mark IV. Magron would not be able to hold the captain down, but he knew where the power cables were situated. Magron reached for his own bolter. The chaplain stepped towards them. He intoned words and raised his hand in a magic sign. On the rise, Kaladin lifted his melter gun and fired, hoping there was still fuel in the much-depleted reservoir. The chaplain span to face him as the searing superheat engulfed him, but he did not burn, nor even fall. A protective bubble seemed to surround him. Kaladin fired again without pause, then a third time, but nothing happened. The reservoir was empty. The Chaos Chaplain, a frightening superhuman figure to Kaladin and Ruggalo, stood staring at his attacker with empty eyes before toppling to lie still. Not even his surplice was charred. There came a repeated loud barking. Sergeant Magron levered himself up so that the bolt explosions caused no more than scorch marks on his own armour. Burrowing through the cancroid growths, blasting between the abutments of the heavy armour plates, the bolts severed the Mark III's power cables, causing severe injuries to the hardened marine body beneath. Abadas was now as immobile as Magron had been when he floated down to the Rodonius planet. It grieved Magron to treat a brother Dark Angel so, but he had killed Space Marines before, and he was ready to do so again if they turned against the Emperor. He unfastened and pulled off the other's wedge-shaped helmet. Captain Abadas did not attempt to look at him. His face was as bleak and expressionless as always, as he endured his pain and his helplessness.
"Forgive me, brother, but I must know the truth."
Ruggalo and Kaladin looked on in horror at what happened next. Sergeant Magron's powered gauntlet reached out and wrenched off Captain Abadas's skull. He then leaned forward, craning his neck, and bit into the back of the captain's exposed, bloodied, living brain. To them, it looked like some dreadful obscene rite or act of cannibalism. They could not know that among a Space Marine's implanted organs was an omophage, enabling him to absorb another person's memories by eating his brain tissue. Sergeant Magron wanted to gain information rapidly, and that meant eating such tissue while its owner still lived, desperate measure though that was. They did not dare approach the location of the horrid feast or even speak in reproach. They backed off and crept away. Captain Abadas knew what was happening to him. Although the human brain possessed no sensory nerves, there was no sensation. He made no protest, however, as Sergeant Magron devoured his cerebellum. Soon, he could not form words in any case. Mouthful after mouthful, Sergeant Magron chewed and swallowed. With each bite, Abadas felt his personality emptying until there was only a vague presence within any memory, a furtive whispering from the warp. Then, nothing. Magron raised his bloody mouth from the emptied skull and regained his feet. The omophage was extracting memory at speed. Magron went into a trance, sorting through the cavalcade that was Zabdek Abadas's extraordinary life, letting it reel past him in a confused jumble. At last, he seized on what he needed. The Horus Heresy. Now he learned the truth of what had really happened to the Dark Angels, and the truth was incredible. Even while Magron's company took part in the attack on the World Eater's interstellar base, Luther, the Angel second in command, had persuaded the remaining garrison on their homeworld of Caliban to side with the rebellion. Having now experienced for himself the seductions of chaos, Magron knew that only a spiritual infection of that kind could have produced such astonishing disloyalty. He lived as though the memories were his own. The bombardment by loyal angels and the subsequent battle which had reduced Caliban to no more than a bare rock. Captain Abadas had been among the traitors. Magron experienced with him his memory of being rescued by the ruinous powers, sucked into the warp and deposited elsewhere. It was Horus who had been killed, not the blessed Emperor. Of the fate of Lionel Johnson, Magron's spiritual preceptor, Abadas knew nothing. But the Chaos Rebellion had not succeeded. The galaxy had not been transformed into a Chaos Realm. Chaos dominated only a few small parts of it, such as the one into which Abadas and Magron had been drawn. There were only a few Dark Angels, Fallen Angels, the Renegades were sometimes named, in the Eye of Terror. Most had been scattered throughout the galaxy. It was a tragic tale, and one which filled Magron with wonder, especially when he learned of the span of time involved. He had drifted in space for 10,000 years. He also learned why Abadas had been prepared to take such trouble over him, to deceive and trick him onto what he regarded as the right path. It was not just because they were both Dark Angels. It was because they were Marines from 10,000 years ago. He despised Space Marines inducted since that time as weak and inferior, superhuman though they still were in ordinary terms. Magron checked the word-bearer's chaplain, who had so nearly committed him to chaos forever. He appeared to be dead. But now Magron saw the four tentacles beneath his surplice, each tipped with a different image. He looked around for the two who had opportunely saved him from spiritual dissolution. They had gone, but he would need their ship, as well as a navigator, if he was to return to his chapter. He retrieved his helmet, relieved Captain Abadas of his spare ammunition, and was about to set out when a movement caught his eye. Racing towards him on a peculiar, fast-stepping mount was the female demon he had seen earlier. He snapped out his bolter and let off a quick volley, fearing to let her too close. He had felt her terrible attraction once before. The bolts exploded against her breasts and belly and did no harm. She trilled, fetching laughter. "Had I a mind, Sergeant Magron, I would pleasure you to death, as I have so many others, but that is not why I am here." Her contralto voice was warm and heady to listen to. How did she know his name? Her next words seemed to be an explanation. "I have consulted with one who ranks higher than myself, a keeper of secrets who hears anything that is said anywhere, in any dimension. There is a mission for you to perform, Sergeant. Don your helmet, for you should not show your face." She dismounted and beckoned. "Come with me, Abdazal." The use of his first name made him distrust her all the more, but Magron replaced his helm, more for his own protection than anything. She could not arouse lust in him, for his modifications meant he had no feelings for a woman. But the sight of her plump buttocks and projecting barbed tail as she turned away from him produced the same fascination he had felt before. This was surely a demon with the power to enslave men's minds. He took only one or two steps before the scene changed. The blighted rose planet was gone. The black light was gone. A great green plain stretched before him, and on it was an armed multitude, millions strong. He saw one or two traitor marines, armour grossly and colourfully corrupted. But most were lesser warriors, hideously mutated, apparelled in hues that shouted and blazed, waving their weapons and roaring with joy. He understood that in the space of a step he had been instantaneously transported to some other place. About half of those he saw carried the emblem he himself now wore, the emblem of Khorne. The rest carried on banners, armour and clothing, various versions of the curiously curved and sinuous sigil he had seen during the attack on the Rose City, and which Abadas had told him was the sign of Zench. And indeed, there loomed over the plain two demonic figures who had appeared back then, one a feathered monstrosity, the other a horned, red-eyed, wolf-faced warrior in black and red armour. They were no more than 50 foot tall now, hooves and talons planted on the turf. He heard the feathered demon addressing the throng, his purring voice reaching to every part of the field.
"We have victory! We have driven off the Imperium's best effort. The way is clear to a final victory. Victory in the Long War."
A huge shout greeted his words. The demon raised a talon, calling for silence. He began to speak of things Magron barely understood, of warp-sourced matter from which a great battle fleet had been constructed. Virtual matter, the demon called it.
"Once my invention has been perfected and made stable," he purred, "there is no limit to what can be achieved. Battlefleets to overwhelm the human Imperium. Worlds created out of nothing. The duplication of worlds already existing. And what if we contrive to remove the Emperor and his palace and replace them with a replica under our own control?
Magron struggled to comprehend. He had always understood that the warp and the physical world were opposites in every way, materium and immaterium. The demon seemed to be boasting of a way to bring about the very overthrow of the physical world that Abadas had described.
But, the demon snarled, we must be patient. Patience is the mother of strategy. And how have we succeeded so far? By our pact between myself and my bloodthirster brother.
The other demon glowered as if he did not like being called a brother by the eagle-like chaos being. The hand holding his great battle axe twitched. A kaleidoscopic flurry whirled around the head of the Zench demon. Had any been able to read that kaleidoscope, and none could, he would have seen that a large part of the Lord of Change's plan was to forge a long-term alliance between Zench and Khorne. Between them, they could crush the other two Chaos Powers, as well as turn on the human Imperium, once he had made virtual matter stable. When all that had been accomplished, of course, there would be no further need for Khorne. Magron was getting an inkling that the pact of which the demon spoke was crucial. Not everyone seemed to like it. The devotees of Khorne, in particular, were becoming restive, contemptuous of what they saw as a call for inactivity. The Zench demon turned to his partner and let out a clarion call.
Does our pact continue, brother?
The bloodthirster's reply was a snarling growl, uttered as if with surly resentment.
Yes!
A silence fell. All were looking up at the two demons. Magron saw that this was a defining moment. If it passed without incident, the alliance would be forged, but the balance was fine. Without even thinking, he turned his external speakers to maximum and roared at the top of his voice,
"Blood for the Blood God!"
His voice echoed away in the aching silence, and then it was as if he had switched on an engine of war. He heard armour powering up, weapons were raised again. He heard his cry taken up in an ever-expanding circle. Blood for the Blood God! 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 Weapons clashed, barked and spewed as the madmen of Khorne, unable to suppress their bloodlust any longer, turned on their traditional enemies. The bloodthirster shook himself and aimed a blow at his ally.
To the Emperor and all his vassals with your clever schemes! Khorne does not wait for blood!
The demons commenced to fight, crushing hundreds beneath their tread as they stepped to and fro. The place of meeting had become an arena of battle. For all the warfare he had seen, Magron had not encountered such rabid bloodletting as this. The turf almost immediately turned into a crimson quagmire. Three champions of Zench rushed at him, eager to have the honour of killing a space marine of Khorne. He fended them off with his chainsword, stepping back. Meanwhile, and was once again on the cindery ground beneath a black sun. The clamour of battle had vanished, as if with the snapping of a switch. A delightful contralto voice trilled at him. He turned to see the demonette still waiting there.
For hated Khorne to gain the alliance of the powers of Zench would be bad for us of Slaanesh, she told him. The Keeper of Secrets has advised me well. Your intervention has begun another war between them instead, one which will engulf the whole Chaos Realm, if I am any judge.
She approached slowly, reaching out with a long, graceful pincer.
Slaanesh rewards those who have served him.
Magron stepped quickly away.
No!
Then let your reward be to go on your way unmolested, space marine.
Without another word, she regained her steed, mounted, and was off into the distance with its long-legged, lolloping gait. Magron was eager to reach the spaceship before it could take off without him. He hurried to the spot and found Ruggalo and Kaladin in the act of heaping coke-like dirt around the bodies of Angelica and Gundrum, having scraped out shallow graves with fragments of rock. They retreated nervously in fear of him, but Magron would brook no argument.
Come, we must return to the Imperium.
I can't navigate out of here, Kaladin protested. This is the Eye of Terror, a chaos realm.
You came in. You can get out,
Magron told him bluntly.
Have faith in the Emperor.
Towering over them, he herded them into the ship. Thanks for watching, everybody. The next episode will be chapters 18 and 19, because they are quite short, and that's the end of the novel. I'll also have a short segment at the end talking about what the author had planned for a sequel to this novel. Unfortunately, the author passed away several years ago, but that should be quite interesting. If you'd like to support the channel, please consider becoming a supporter on Patreon or a YouTube member, as these brave champions of humanity have done right here. And thanks very much, lads. Really appreciate it. Really helps me out a lot. It's fantastic. And if you can't do that, though, a like is enough. Thank you very much. And also remember to subscribe to the channel and let me know in the comments what you thought. But not if you thought it was crap. I don't want to know that. All right. See you later. Bye-bye.